Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We just got word that the mayor is going to hold a news conference at around 11:15 on snow cleanup. We will bring that to you live. Meanwhile, science writer Gary Taubes is still challenging conventional wisdom when it comes to fat and food. The correspondent for Science magazine has written several famous articles on the topic. Remember that What If Fat Doesn't Make You Fat? New York Times Magazine cover story a few years ago, and two books, Good Calories, Bad Calories, and his new one, Why We Get Fat and What We Can Do About It. Both these books argue against the theory that weight gain is a simple thermodynamic result of calories in versus calories out. Now Taubes looks beyond the question of how people gain weight and into the less explored question of why people gain weight. Gary Taubes, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be here.
And you've been best known in the past for arguing that it's carbs rather than fat that primarily make us fat. Are you now arguing that calorie intake and exercise don't matter?
Yeah, I'm just trying to point out the fundamental issue here is for the past 50 years, we've thought of obesity as this disorder of energy balance. It's a line you'll see in virtually every article, science article written on the subject.
Energy being calories.
Energy being calories. So we take in more calories than we expend. We get fatter. You know, we overeat, sedentary behavior. And the point I'm trying to get the public health community and the physicians and the insurers to notice, I mean, we were talking about health care costs in your last hour, is that if somebody gets fatter, they have to take in more calories than they expend. That's a given. That's what the laws of thermodynamics tell you.
If they get fat, you mean once you're already fat, then need more calories?
If you're getting bigger, you have to take in more calories than you expend. You know, energy, that's... If you're growing, I mean, one of the metaphors that I use in this book is a growing child. A growing child eats voraciously and tends to lie around the house all day. And if he's growing, he has to be taking in more calories than he expended, right? Because he's getting heavier. But he doesn't grow because he's taking in more calories than he expends. He takes in more calories than he expends because he's growing. And as I point out in this book and my last book, prior to the Second World War, when all the significant medical research was done in Europe, the European clinicians who dealt with obesity had a different theory about it. They said it's basically a disorder of fat regulation. Our fat tissue is very carefully regulated by hormones, by enzymes, by the central nervous system. And if that regulation gets out of whack, then somebody will begin to accumulate excess fat. Just like you can, if a child gets a tumor in his pituitary gland and begins to over-secrete growth hormone, that child will grow abnormally tall. And they're saying if this hormonal enzymatic regulation of the fat tissue gets out of whack, then somebody will get fatter, and that would be the obvious cause of obesity or overweight.
So, therefore, all calories are not equal?
All
is that kind of the point here? You could eat as much, by your lights, you could eat as much meat as you want and not gain a lot of weight. But if you eat carbs, because they're processed by the body differently, you're more likely to gain weight.
Well, yeah, we're jumping ahead of the game here. And I'm trying to, one of the things I'm trying to do in this book is keep the discussion to why we get fat rather than what we have to do to reverse it. But if you merely look at obesity, the way the pre-World War II Europeans said, they said, look, obesity is a disorder of excess fat accumulation, which is first principles. So what regulates fat accumulation? And for instance, sex hormones obviously do, because men and women fatten differently. So we know that sex hormones play a key role. And unfortunately, the Second World War comes along, this European school vanishes. After the war, obesity research is reinvented by nutritionists, mostly at the Harvard School of Public Health, people who, by the way, never treat patients. They study, you know, rats and mice in the laboratory. And they decide it's all pretty simple. It's all this gluttony and sloth overeating thing. And by the late 1950s, biochemists and physiologists begin to, they invent the techniques necessary to figure out what exactly it is that regulates fat accumulation, fat oxidation and accumulation, both the burning of fat in the body and the storage of fat in the body. And by the early 1960s, it's very clear that it's fundamentally the hormone insulin. So if insulin regulates fat accumulation, and there's no controversy about this, if you go to a biochemistry textbook or you go to an endocrinology textbook and you look up fat cell, the technical term for fat cells is adipocytes. You go to the index and you look up adipocyte, it will tell you that the hormone insulin determines how much fat a fat cell stores. And then if you connect this to the pre-World War II European thinking on obesity, all you'd have to do is say, look, the same thing that makes a human fat is what makes a fat cell fat, since we're just the compilation of all our fat cells. And that's fundamentally this hormone insulin. And insulin is regulated by the carbohydrate content of the diet.
Where does exercise come in?
Well, the problem is exercise, the idea with exercise is we're thinking in terms of if we can increase energy expenditure. Now we're back to it all being about energy. And the point is it's not about energy. There's always, your fat cells, there's always more than enough nutrients circulating in your bloodstream for any cell to take up. Okay? Even during, you know, when you're not getting enough to eat, your body still makes sure that there's more than enough nutrients for your cells to take up. And your fat cells could always take up excess fat, but they don't. So the point I'm making is it's not the thinking in terms of energy balance, like I have to go out and expend more energy, is the wrong way to think about obesity, and it's the wrong way to deal with it. And we've been doing it for 50 years.
But if I, to take an extreme example, if I ran a marathon a day, I would certainly burn more calories and thinner.
Not necessarily.
Than if I was sedentary and ate the exact same diet, wouldn't I?
Actually, not necessarily. That's one of the amusing aspects of this, and that's one of the things I'm trying to get the nutrition, obesity, public health authorities to deal with. If you look at the research on exercise and weight, they actually can show that you could increase, that you could lose weight by increasing expenditure, running your marathon a day, and there's a very simple reason for it. Do you remember the concept of working up an appetite?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go out, you run a marathon, you work up an appetite, you play 18 holes of golf, you work up an appetite, two sets of tennis, go for a hike, you get hungrier, right?
If you exercise more, you eat even more?
You eat even more. And it's this well-known, it used to be, you know, that literally 50 years ago, that's what your doctor would have told you if you were too thin. They'd say, well, why don't you go, you know, work up an appetite? Now you're supposed to be able to exercise more, and the idea is your hunger is so disassociated from the energy your body expends that you can merely go out and, say, burn 500 extra calories and your body won't.
Do you know if science bears that out, if people who do exercise a lot actually eat so much more than people who are sedentary?
Well, absolutely. That's one of the, you know, if you look at the epidemiologic evidence, meaning evidence across populations, you could use energy expenditure as a very good measure of energy intake. Actually, here's another way to think about it, because we're all in energy balance virtually all the time. Even obese people are in energy balance. By that, what I mean is if we're not gaining weight or losing weight, we are in energy balance. So even somebody who runs 5 miles a day but maintains their weight, and that's true of lean people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they're eating to compensate for the extra expenditure they do.
So in our last 90 seconds, unfortunately, we're already so out of time. If your alternative hypothesis for all this is right and the public health establishment is wrong, how did it get so entrenched?
In the 1960s, when biochemists and physiologists realized that insulin regulated fat accumulation and carbohydrates, in effect, regulate insulin levels, doctors treating obese patients read the same literature and said, hey, it looks like if I get rid of the carbs, I can get people to lose weight. And they found that it works remarkably easily. Again, you're just getting rid of the causative agent of the disorder. And unfortunately, these doctors included people like Robert Atkins. So they wrote books about it because it worked so well. The books sold very well. And because a diet that removes carbohydrates is high in fat, to compensate, protein levels stay relatively constant in any diet, the medical community thought this was quack. We were telling people to eat high-fat diets, that's going to cause heart disease. We know that's not true now. Copious studies have shown that high-fat diets do not cause heart disease. And, you know, this whole act, it all got tied up in the Atkins diet, which in medical school, you know, doctors are taught as quackery. And to this day, half the battle I'm fighting is to get people to realize that there's an underlying science here that has to be taken seriously. It's not about what diet works. It's literally about what makes us fat.
With his theories on calories and carbs and exercise and fat and health, science writer Gary Taubes from Science Magazine, his new book, Why We Get Fat and What We Can Do About It. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.